Most people think Jamaican gangsters are just trigger-happy thugs, violent men raised in poverty, loyal to politics, and destined for prison or a bullet. But what if I told you the real mastermind behind one of the most feared drug empires in the Western Hemisphere was a U.S.-educated businessman, a man in tailored suits who moved millions in cocaine while shaking hands with Wall Street bankers? His name was Vivian Blake. And while names like Jim Brown and Dudas made headlines for their brutality, Blake quietly ran the brain of the shower posse from luxury condos, law firms, and private jets. He wasn't just laundering drug money. He was rewriting the rules of international crime. But when the empire began to collapse, Blake didn't go down with it. He turned. And in doing so, he didn't just betray the posse. He detonated a bomb that would shatter the silence of the underworld. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Gentleman Don. Vivian Blake didn't fit the image of a Jamaican drug lord. He wore silk ties, quoted legal cases from memory, and could charm investors and informants alike. Born in West Kingston, Blake was ambitious from the start. Unlike many of his peers who climbed the ranks through violence, he climbed through books. He emigrated to the United States in the 1970s, studying law and briefly working in the legal system before seeing a more lucrative path, trafficking. Blake co-founded the Shower Posse with Lester Lloyd Jim Brown Coke, but their partnership was anything but equal. While Jim Brown maintained political ties with the Jamaican Labor Party, JLP, and terrorized Kingston's Tivoli Gardens with public executions and firebombs, Blake stayed behind the scenes. He ran the money, mapped drug routes, and managed the organization's logistics with the precision of a Fortune 500 executive. Miami, New York, Toronto. Blake turned North America into a profitable circuit of cocaine distribution, bolstered by a network of enforcers, smugglers, and bankers. He was the posse's brain. By the early 1980s, the Shower Posse was responsible for a tidal wave of cocaine flooding into U.S. cities. Blake's genius wasn't in brute force. It was in his ability to whitewash blood money. He bought nightclubs, trucking companies, real estate, each a front, each untouchable on paper. He kept his hands clean while the streets ran red, but even masterminds slip. In 1987, a DEA investigation exposed the breadth of the Shower Posse's American operations. Wiretaps, informants, dead bodies with ties to Kingston. The feds called it the Jamaican Connection, and Vivian Blake was its ghost. The indictment hit hard. Over 40 posse members were arrested across Florida and New York. Blake, however, vanished. For nearly a decade, he lived in exile, reportedly moving between South America, Europe, and the Caribbean. But exile wasn't peace. It was paranoia. He knew too much, and his survival depended on silence. Back in Kingston, his name became a ghost story. Whispers of betrayal, questions about loyalty. He had once been the man who kept the machine running. Now, he was the man everyone feared would talk. And then, in 1998, Vivian Blake did the unthinkable. He gave himself up. In a Miami courtroom, he faced multiple charges: drug trafficking, racketeering, conspiracy to murder. The prosecutors expected a fight, but Blake came with something far more valuable than a defense: information. He turned government witness. In exchange for a lighter sentence, he offered the U.S. Justice Department the internal anatomy of the Shower Posse: shipment schedules, names of enforcers, bank routing numbers, the deals with Colombian cartels. He didn't just implicate foot soldiers. He named leaders, politicians, police officers. Some called it betrayal. Others called it survival. But one thing was certain: Vivian Blake had drawn a target on his own back, and in doing so, shook the very foundation of Jamaican organized crime. Chapter 2. Dead Men Don't Talk. By 2001, Vivian Blake was serving a significantly reduced sentence in the U.S. under tight security. Unlike Jim Brown, who died in a mysterious prison fire, or Dudas, who resisted extradition with bloodshed, Blake seemed to have orchestrated his survival with the same core logic that built his empire. When he was deported to Jamaica in 2007, it wasn't a hero's welcome. There were no crowds, no old comrades waiting, just quiet fear. He stepped back into a country that had changed, one still bleeding from garrison politics, now ruled by newer dons. Dudas Coke had taken over Tivoli. The old rules were gone. Blake was a relic, and his return sent chills through Kingston's criminal underground. Why was he back? Some say it was redemption. Others believe he had one last plea, a memoir, a film deal, a tell-all that would blow the lid off Jamaica's narco-political nexus. Whatever it was, people were watching, and some wanted him dead. By 2010, Blake was living in relative obscurity. He gave speeches about turning away from crime, mentoring youth about the dangers of the life. But he also carried himself like a man who knew he was marked. He traveled with caution. He trusted no one. Former posse members reportedly feared he would speak publicly about their operations. Then it happened. On March 23, 2010, Vivian Blake collapsed and died in a Kingston hospital. The official cause was listed as a heart attack, but few believed it. His death was too convenient. There was no autopsy release, no thorough investigation. Within hours, the streets were buzzing. He was silenced. They got to him. Too many secrets. He had become the final witness to an era of corruption, blood, and international conspiracy. And now, that witness was gone. Today, Vivian Blake is a name barely mentioned in textbooks. His story sanitized, his image obscured behind more photogenic villains. But his fingerprints are everywhere. The Shower Posse didn't just kill people. It restructured the drug economy of the Caribbean diaspora. And Blake wasn't just part of it. He designed it. His betrayal of the posse gave the U.S. government its only real map of the syndicate structure. But at what cost? Did he deserve to die? Or did he die because too many others deserve to live in silence? And most disturbingly, what if the story of Vivian Blake isn't just about crime, but about a global system that needs men like him to exist until they become too dangerous to keep alive?